Georgie Thorogood on the big show, 10 after 8. Good morning to you. If you're just waking up, I've got Senator Charles Grassley on the line from Washington, D.C. Good morning, Senator.
I'm here, Fred.
Hi there.
I've been sitting right here trying to find something. I'm not a very good filer, and I was trying to find something.
That's all right. I was going to get your impressions of the, first thing out of the chute. I'll back up and say Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving to everybody that's had it already. Merry Christmas,
right,
too.
And then onward to Christmas now. But the big doings in Washington, D.C. over the weekend about the tax bills going to reconciliation now, the House and Senate, and there are significant differences. First of all, were you happy with how the Senate bill came out? Did you get what you thought we wanted here in Iowa?
Well, very definitely. I'd quote a Tax Foundation study of the Senate bill, and the House bill is a little bit different, but not a whole lot different. And that is that the average Iowan, both from increased wages and from saving on taxes, should get about $2,600 over the course. And I don't know if that means next year or the next few years, because it takes a while for the benefits of a tax bill to kick in. Secondly, I think it has the capability of increasing wages for corporations. Wages for employees of corporations from this standpoint. And economists differ on exactly how much of corporation tax comes out of wages versus dividends, et cetera. But let's take the lowest figure of 25%. So if you reduce the corporate tax from 35 to 20, it ought to increase wages for workers and also increase employment, because when you reduce the cost of capital, it creates jobs and ought to increase productivity. And with increased productivity, you increase jobs. But I think the main thing is the middle-income tax cut.
This is Senator Charles Grassley. We're talking about the Senate version, which will be reconciled with the House version of the new tax bill. So now, a few of the things that were promised that I don't think we're getting. The reform aspect of it, the promised postcard, for instance, the House bill had four brackets. The Senate bill has seven. So we're going to get someplace probably in a compromise position, would you guess, between those two numbers?
Yes, from that standpoint. But I think that, you're kind of raising the same point I raised before we actually wrote the Senate bill in the Committee on Finance, and we were going through what we're going to include or not include. And so somebody brought up seven brackets. Well, why seven brackets? Because we wanted to keep the progressivity of the income tax about the same as it's been, where the top 1% pays 40% of the income tax. So I says, well, four versus seven brackets isn't simplistic. Well, my colleague Senator Scott of South Carolina said the definition of simplicity comes from this, that we're increasing the standard deduction from $12,000 to $24,000, and you're going to have only 10% of the people making the long form, 90% are going to fill out the short form. That's the definition of simplicity.
I think the numbers are that only 30% fill out, or 30% take itemized deductions, 70% do not. So
That's true today. With this, with the Senate bill, it'll be 90 and 10.
We'll see. Next item of differential, the corporate tax of 20% that you mentioned, which I believe is the real bright spot of this thing and really nothing else, but this is. It's immediate in the House bill and somehow delayed a year in your bill. Why is that?
Because of two reasons. One, we have immediate expensing of all capital investment except for buildings, and that is a real stimulant for the economy. And number two, by delaying by just 1 year and making it permanent well into the future, not sunsetting like the individual tax does at the end of 10 years, which is required under Senate rules, we're able to increase the tax reduction for middle-income workers.
Increase the tax deduction for middle-income workers.
In other words, the trade-off of saving the corporate tax being at 35 for 1 year longer,
right,
along with some other things, helped us reduce the individual tax for middle-income people, like reducing the 15% down to 12% bracket and the 25 down to 22.
Right. Okay. So that's why the delay.
Yeah.
The other thing is the state and local deduction. The House bill has compromise on property tax deduction up to 10 grand. Your bill eliminates it altogether.
No, that was compromised at the last 2 days with an amendment that was leaves it just exactly the way it is in the House. In other words, state and local sales and income tax is not deductible, but local property tax up to $10,000 is deductible. But remember, for businesses like farmers that may be listening, that tax or a property tax connected with businesses would have been a business deduction anyway. But we're talking about non-business property tax. Up to $10,000 can be deducted now.
Okay, so those two things are already similar, you're saying, so that's good.
Yeah.
No fight there. What about the ACA mandate? It was preserved under the Senate, under the House bill, and eliminated under your bill. Where are we going to go with that on the reconciliation?
I've been told that the House will accept the Senate provisions, which does away with one of the most regressive taxes in our tax code. Let me explain why it's regressive. Obamacare requires people to buy insurance. 52,000 Iowans have decided, and if you don't buy the insurance, you have to pay tax to the IRS of a certain amount. I think it goes up to $695 about now. So 85% of that 52,000 Iowans are below $50,000 a year income. So it eliminates one of the most regressive things in the Democratic tax code, where they increase taxes in Obamacare 23 different times.
Is this the spike in the heart of the ACA, or the start of it at least?
I'd rather say the latter, the start of it, yes.
Okay. All right. This is Senator Chuck Grassley, by the way. You can call and ask questions, 753-KCPS. He's, of course, eyeballs deep in this tax bill this week. And will you participate in the reconciliation or just the leadership?
I would like to say I should, because I used to be chairman of the committee, and I'm the most senior member of the committee. But quite frankly, when you're chairman of the Judiciary Committee, that's seen as having a lot of responsibilities, and sometimes more junior members of the committee get into that. But I have told them that I expected to be on it, but that doesn't mean I'm going to be on it.
Gotcha. Caller, go ahead for Senator Grassley.
Yes, Senator. I have a couple of comments and basically a question. I want to kind of upset with all the ins and outs of this tax reform that a lot of those states in the East Coast and West Coast tried to drive how we were going to initiate that because they pay high taxes. That is not our problem. That is their local problem that they need to work on. So I commend you on sticking to your guns on that issue. The other one I have is with all the allegations that are coming forth with different representatives and congressmen of the Senate and House. When those allegations are made of a sexual nature and they are allowed to just silently go out, why do we allow them to keep their pension?
Good question.
I would like to see that change.
Yeah. Go ahead, Senator.
Okay. Right now, I'm working on legislation that doesn't deal with the comment the constituent just made, but it does follow up on a lot of things that's wrong with the present situation. the things where it seems like all the sexual harassment processes to determine whether somebody's guilty, it's tilted towards the victim, and there ought to be more equity in the process. There ought to be more transparency so we know who it involves, and under what conditions a person ought to be personally liable as opposed to the taxpayers being liable. In other words, if it's unknown to the person in charge, the senator in charge, but where the senator or the congressman is personally involved and he ought to know better, then obviously the taxpayers should not be responsible for that. And so I'm writing legislation to try to speed up the process and to give equity between the victim and the perpetrator. And any way you look at it, sexual harassment is just sexual harassment is just plain wrong. In fact, what I've heard some of my colleagues doing that they've been accused of, I just can't understand that. It's just like living in the animal kingdom, it seems like. Right. And I just don't have any understanding of it. But I'm working on something that'll bring what you've heard me talk about so much over the last 30 years. Transparency in government brings accountability.
I can't envision a set of circumstances where the taxpayer should be on the hook in any case. We didn't do it.
Well, I'm not going to disagree with you right now. I'm just telling you this is something I got to think my way through.
Gotcha. Go ahead, caller.
Senator Grassley, question, those amendments or changes to those rules, are those something that are brought up before the specific ethics committee, or is it something that's brought up before the full body of the Senate?
Two steps. One, the ethics committee, and then if the ethics committee decides, and by the way, the ethics committee is made up of an equal number of Republicans and Democrats. So
right.
To get a majority, you have to have a majority of both parties. But anyway, they listen to all the accusations and listen to the rebuttal from those accused, and then if it's brought before the Senate, two things can take place. You can have censure, which would be saying, you're an awful guy. We aren't going to kick you out of the Senate. That'd be a majority vote. Or if you want to kick them out of the Senate, then under the Constitution, that takes a two-thirds vote.
Correct. But my question being, the changes that you are proposing, do you present those changes to the full Senate for their approval? Or
yeah.
Do you go before the committee specifically for their approval?
Yeah, the whole Senate will approve them. Now, I've already got one bill passed with Senator Klobuchar that first of all, let's go back. If you'd let me give you just a little bit of history. In 1995, I got the underlying legislation that this stuff applies to, and it's bigger than just sexual harassment. It's called the Congressional Accountability Act. Between 1938 and 1990s, Congress exempted itself from a lot of laws that would apply to every one of you people in Burlington. So we had two sets of laws, one for, and this would be about 15 different laws. But going back to the wage and hour law of 1938, would just give you one example, or civil rights laws of 1964. Anyway, they apply to you. So we had one set of laws for Capitol Hill, another set of laws for the rest of the country. I thought that wasn't right. So I got the Congressional Accountability Act passed. Well, the rules under that said in the case of sexual harassment that the offices ought to have prevention training for everybody that serves, including the employees, the supervisors, and the member of Congress, but they didn't have to do it. So the Klobuchar-Grassley bill makes that mandatory now, and that passed about a month ago. And just last week, every member of Congress now, the House passed it. They passed a separate one because this applies, ours just applied to the Senate. And so now the new legislation I'm writing goes beyond that, and I described that, and I won't describe that again. But every Congress, which is starting out every 2 years, every member and everybody in the office has to have this prevent, call it whatever you want to, but to prevent sexual harassment. In fact, I went through mine, and I hope nobody thinks I need to go through it, but I did. I spent 50 minutes this morning between 8 and 8:50 watching the video that everybody's going to have to watch.
Thank you for the question. Yes, caller, go ahead. I lost that other caller. Senator Grassley, isn't there some kind of kooky 30-day waiting period, though, non-disclosure of sorts or whatever? And if so, what is that for?
Ask your question again, please.
Is there a 30-day counseling slash non-disclosure?
Yeah, that's right, and that's one of the things. Well, I don't find what I was instructed today. There's got to be 30-day, like you asked, yes, then 60 to 90 days. But there's a whole bunch of other stuff that I saw on television 2 weeks ago that perpetrated my writing a new piece of legislation. But you're right. That's kind of so there's an opportunity for people to talk maybe before you file charges.
Okay. I don't know how much I'd be for that. But onward to another topic. Back to this tax thing just real briefly. Tell me about the estate tax and how that affects us. The House bill, I believe, had a double exclusion and a repeal in 2025. And your bill had what?
Double the exemption. So I think it's about $5.5 million at this point because it's indexed. It started out at $5 million, but indexed, and then we doubled that.
So we wouldn't have any tax implications unless our estate was $5 million or more.
$11 million or more.
$11 million or more.
Yeah. Okay. Now you're correct. The House did away with the estate tax totally. I support that. But if we can't get that, doubling the help. It gets most of the estates that would be affected today, the whole point of either doing away with it or doubling it is, you know, there's family farmers, there's small businesses, you work hard to save your money, you deprive yourself early in life to save and invest and start a farm or start a small business. And keep it going and pass it on from one generation to the other. We're trying to give incentive and encouragement and reward for those that work and save versus people that are very wealthy but spend it from day to day. And it's got nothing to do with the working men and women of America that live from paycheck to paycheck. They probably are have to spend their money very wisely, but there's a lot of people that make a lot of money, and some of them just fritter it away, live from day to day, even if they're very wealthy. And then there's other people that deprive themselves and save and create a business and hire people and invest capital in our country and make our country more productive.
Caller, you have to be the last question so we can let Senator Grassley out on time.
Yeah, Senator, where are you at on this blue slip, which isn't even really legality, you know, for holding up Trump's?
Sure. Before I answer your question, I don't know if you've got access to the website and go to the Senate speeches. 3 weeks ago, I gave two speeches on it, and then more recently, I gave a speech before my committee, and it gives you a whole 100-year history of the blue slip process under 18 different chairmen. And all but two chairmen always had some exceptions to the blue slip policy, and I'm one of those that have exceptions to it.
So are you going around in them and getting things moving here?
Well, yeah. In fact, let me tell you how fast we're moving. In fact, the Democrats are complaining because we're moving so fast. We have
that breaks my heart.
We have certified through the Senate more circuit court judges than any president since Ronald Reagan.
Thank you, caller.
Thank you.
Senator Grassley, you get the last word. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I hope people will watch this week. A conference committee will be appointed, work out the difference in the House and Senate, and hopefully before the end of the week, well, no, it'll probably run into next week, we will probably have the first tax cut, tax simplification, tax reform, and it includes all of the above that's been passed by the United by the Congress since 1986. And it'll be middle-income tax cuts and making our international business more competitive.
Some could argue it got a little more confusing, though, with the various deductions being tinkered with and some of the other things. But we'll wait and see how it reconciles.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
All right. Have a good day.